You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then, Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now, Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
While you were skipping stones, building forts, and flying kites, I was missing school and all my Saturday nights. Other kids were climbing trees and rolling down hills. I was singing songs to pay my family's bills. Little me, growing up Broadway. Little me.
Hello, welcome back to Little Me, Growing Up Broadway with me, Mark Tuminelli. My guest today began her career at the age of 7 in the film Premonition before making history in the original Broadway cast of Annie, creating the role of the youngest orphan, Molly. After Annie, she joined the cast of the hit TV show All in the Family, and then co-starred in its continuation, Archie Bunker's Place. She appeared on dozens of TV shows, including Hotel, Mr. Belvedere, Murder, She Wrote, Tales from the Dark Side, and Days of Our Lives. Now a very successful songwriter, collaborating on such hits as Natasha Bedingfield's Unwritten and Pocketful of Sunshine. She's a Golden Globe nominee, and I'm so happy she's here today. Please welcome Danielle Brisbois. Did I kind of do the name right?
You got my starting age wrong.
Okay.
So I was three when I first started. And then my first movie, I was 5. And I started in Annie when I was technically 6, but I had a lie to be equity.
Oh my God. So. Let's break it all down. First of all, I want to just talk about the two.
Oh, I'm an Oscar nominee too.
Oh my
not
God.
Just a Golden Globe
why is
nominee.
That not, why is that not on your things?
What things?
Like your Wikipedia and
oh,
things.
I don't know. I have to work on that stuff.
You do. Wait, what do you have an Oscar nomination for?
For a song I wrote for a film called Begin Again with Mark Ruffalo, Keira Knightley, and Adam Levine, and Song Lost Stars. We did a lot of songs for that movie.
Oh my God, you are such a wildly successful songwriter. Lost my mind when I'm like, she wrote Unwritten. That's like, everyone in the world knows that song. I mean, also,
but Unwritten's the one.
It must be so thrilling to be like, oh, I wrote that. Like,
what? Yeah. Oh, yeah, it is. I'm very proud of it. I love it.
It's so great. I worked up this musical called Emma, and it's in that show. It's in like also a lot of jukebox musicals. It's like it's everywhere. I mean, it's you've written a hit song that will outlive everybody. It's kind of thrilling.
Thank you. Yeah, it is. I love
All
it.
All right, we'll talk more about songwriting towards the end. But let's go back to this 5-year-old. How does this happen? How does a 3- and 4-year-old start working in this business?
Well, obviously my mother was involved.
Yes, okay. That's how it goes.
But not, and my grandmother as well. But not like in a Gypsy Rose kind of a way. like that. So basically when I was really little, we went to Sears Roebuck, you know, those little pictures you can take at there. And the guy that worked there said, your daughter comes off really good on camera. You should go see this manager in the city named Kathy Dowd.
Okay.
Who, and so we went, and of course my mother goes, she's going to be a star, you know? So we go into the city. And before that, I was always like imitating things on TV. Like I loved listening to opera, like I would be caught, like, wake my parents up at 6 a.m. playing the record of Beverly Sills, like, opera. Like, I loved, like, weird stuff when I was a kid. So we go in the city, we meet Kathy Dowd, and she sends me up on an audition the same day. And I get it. It was for a commercial. And then my mother also knew this singing teacher. I don't know how she knew him, but she knew this guy named Al Greiner, who was at Phil Black's studio as well in the city. And so we went to see Al. And he thought I had talent. And I started taking lessons with him. And then I started with Phil. And just from being there, you start meeting everything. By the time I was like eight, I did over like 100 commercials. Like I was the only dark haired, brown eyed kid at the time in the city working. Yeah. I'd go into these auditions. And it was literally blondes and redheads. And I'd be like the one like, hey, you got the cannoli.
You know? And you were like a very New York kid, like in look and style. I'm sure that really set you apart.
You know, pale skin, dark bangs, you know, brown eyes, you know, and it looked like my parents should own a pizzeria basically. So I just started booking things I'm sure you're going to ask the question of how I get into Annie. So I'll save that.
Of course,
for
we're
you
getting there. Later. But before Annie, you had done this movie Premonition and you did an episode of Kojak, which was my grandma's favorite show.
A lot of commercials I did. Also, at the same time, while that was going on, my mother and Al Greiner constantly had me performing in old age homes, homes for the deaf, homes for the blind, and at times, home for the deaf and blind.
What would you perform crazy. There?
Just different songs, like, you know, like Everything's Coming Up Roses was one of my staples, or
of course,
Don't Rain on My Parade.
Yeah.
Or my favorite was Soon It's Gonna Rain. I loved that song.
Oh, it's a great song.
It was never the showstopper for a kid, but I felt it. I forgot to even, and then before even all that, there was a drag club in the city called Gypsies that Gypsy ran and owned. And somehow I met Gypsy and he had me before I was even on Broadway. I was the opening act for the drag show for a few weeks. I'd be like the special surprise guest. The curtains would open and be me. And I'd be like, why don't you come up and see me sometime, big boy?
No,
it's not the men in your life that counts. It's the life in your men, with my sequins bodysuit on and the whole thing. And I loved it. And
oh my God, the gays probably lost their minds for this little kid.
It was so much fun. It was so much fun. And I just loved it. It was just such a great, we called him Uncle Gypsy. He was awesome. And so I did that. You know, I was always doing different things. So
when did the Annie audition come to you?
Well, I didn't quite have a proper audition. So
okay, here we go. Buckle up, everybody.
Buckle up, buttercup.
Here's the story.
You've heard of the Jacobies, Dolores Jacoby and all her kids?
Yes, of course.
At the time, they were like everywhere in the city. They were lovely people. And they were at Phil Black's dance studio. Everybody was at Phil Black's dance studio at the time. At least to me, it seemed that way. And my grandmother used to have to sit in the car outside Phil's to like not get ticketed by the meter maids because they short the meters all the time. Yeah. So my grandmother's in the car. It's like, we're rushing to get out to do something with the meter. And Dolores Jacoby is coming up the stairs with her son, with Billy Jacoby. And because I was a girl and she was a boy, we were in a competition for things. So she would tell us tips. If she had daughters, she wouldn't have told us, but she didn't.
Got
Billy
it.
Was a boy. So she was just, you guys go to the Annie audition. My mother's like, what audition? I'm like, the Annie audition. It's right now. Get her down there. So that was all we had to hear. We go down there. They're like, it's a play. We had no clue what it was.
Yeah.
Like,
why would anyone know? Yeah.
I had to go. So we get to where the audition is. We run in and they're like, oh, the auditions are, we're done for the day. I'm like, she's like, no, Danielle has an audition. And then they're like, how old are you? I'm like, I knew I had to be seven. I'm like, seven, even though I'm only six. And this is before Goodspeed. This is like the beginning.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they let me go in. And luckily, I've always had a song prepared. And I went in and I sang Over the Rainbow. And then I think I sang Soon It's Gonna Rain as well, my other favorite song. Because my mother couldn't direct me.
She loves a ballad.
That's the song that came out of my mouth when I wasn't being told what to do. But I went in there and I sang. And then they made me sing Happy Birthday as well in the room.
Okay.
And when we left, they were basically like, you know, not official, but basically we want her in the play. And I think I reminded Martin so much of Sasha as well when I was little. And it was just kind of like a love affair started right then.
At that point, this character did not have a name. It was like the little one, right? Or something like that.
Yeah, it was called the little one. I mean, I have my original script. I have the Goodspeed scripts. I have everything.
Oh my God, amazing.
So it was the little one. And then they called her Mary Jane.
Okay.
And I know Sasha thought it was Mary
Ann. Sasha thought it was Mary Ann. Okay.
It was actually Mary Jane, but close enough. Close enough. And then it changed to Molly,
decide what it would be?
I got to have input. Yeah, I got to have input. I mean, the interesting thing about the early days of Annie is that a lot of the characters and what all the other little girls and productions since they were basically copying a lot of us, you know, our original cast, because like Peter Gennaro and Martin, they were such instinctual artists that they would look at what they had and go like, well, let's make this, let's not change the nature of this kid that we love. Let's make this in the show. So like, I was a tap dancer. I loved to do cartwheels all the time. I was always making funny noises, that kind of stuff like that, like going around. And if you look at it in the actual play, then a lot of those characteristics come in.
Well, you had a big tap solo and then did cartwheels and then made that sound.
But I was like the idiot savant at tap when I was a kid. And that's why, and to Peter Gennaro, I was like, that's brilliant, you know, or like, you know, all the different, you know, I mean, and Annie is so Annie. I mean, I know Kristen Weygaard was Annie before and it was in the book, but I mean, once Andrea started doing Annie, it was just like,
the whole thing shifted. What do you remember about those early days when you guys first got to Goodspeed and all these girls were together and you're the baby? Did you feel like the baby? Did you feel like,
we just had a blast. I mean, I felt like the baby in some ways, like as I could work it, but I mean, we were like, has anybody ever told you all the pranks we pulled at the Howard Johnson's hotel?
No, tell us.
Oh my God. We were like, how that hotel survived us, I don't know. But we were at the Banner Lodge staying there, and then we all shifted to the Howard Johnson's. But at that Howard Johnson's, we probably gave tons of people heart attacks. We'd like scare people coming around the corners. We filled the whole pool up with bubble bath and hair dye.
Oh my God.
At the pool at the hotel. We put racks in there. I mean, poor Reed Shelton was in the room next to like some of us kids. That man, I think, was about to have a heart attack from us. Like we tortured we had the best time. We had so much fun.
It feels like the world's greatest summer camp ever from every single person who was part of Goodspeed, except Kristen Weygaard. It didn't go as well for her, but
you know what? Kristen was okay with it. Kristen, I mean, have you met Kristen?
I have not met her. I'm a huge fan of Grace of My Heart. Do you know that movie? She does all the vocal singing for Ileana Douglas, and it's so good. It's a great movie. Check it out.
Kristen is just this beautiful, like she really is like a strawberry plant. She's this beautiful flower. And I remember like when we were up at Goodspeed, she had her own little apartment, like place to stay. And I used to go in there, hang out with her all the time. And she had this wonderful strawberry shampoo and she would like, let me wash my hair with it. Kristen was just always this beautiful girl, very graceful, never jealous, never, she always had a bigger understanding of things. And she just was full of, she handled it beautifully, you know. And I'm sure it was hard, but she handled it well. And never made anybody feel bad for what happened.
Did you feel like while it was happening at Goodspeed, like this is going to be something? Or at that point, there's no way to have known that?
Well, you got to realize, I was about 3 years younger than all the girls in the play, which when you're a kid, that's a huge difference. So some things that other people may remember is a little foggy for me, of course, some of the memories. Yeah. But I didn't have anything to compare it to. I always thought it was great. I mean, like opening night was a disaster. The night they had us, because they only put us in the colored rainbow dresses, the Annie dresses, like a few performances in, they decided to do that. And I remember when I first, in the rehearsals, because you had to do your change on stage, right? And I had to put on that yellow dress and I could never do it, get it zippered right. And then the night we finally do it on stage, I was like, it went really well. Like, oh my God, I did this. And I'm in the front of the stage. Everybody's hysterical laughing. And I realized my dress was put on backwards. I thought that's why it was so easy to zipper up.
Because you were just like a little kid. Like,
yeah, but you know, I was the first kid to meet Sandy. I remember when Bill brought Sandy in, I remember being like, sometimes like the moms would be off doing stuff and I would be in the rehearsal room and underneath the Goodspeed, and Martin, Charles and Tom were working on songs for the show, and I would just lay underneath the piano with the dog and listen to them writing songs for Annie, which was incredible.
What a memory!
And even as a young kid, I knew this was special. I knew Lori Beachman was special. She was amazing. You know, so I think especially as a young kid, you realize certain things are special.
Innately. How much of watching, you know, Martin and Tom and everyone create this show, how much do you think that had an effect on you as a songwriter? I mean, to see people create these things in front of you.
I've always had an obsession with songwriters. I mean, I could go back now, like in my head now, and really take it in. But maybe it was good that I did it, because I just felt the natural beauty of what they were doing. I just knew there was something special in that moment. I couldn't tell you like what it was or why it was special. But I remember just really liking being there and hearing it. And it felt privileged to me.
That's so cool. So this show goes from, you know, we go from Goodspeed to DC and then we're going to Broadway. What was like your family's reaction to this, like kind of overnight stardom?
I mean, it was super fun and it was exciting. And the good thing about it for being a kid is that I wasn't like the only kid in the play. So I was like around other kids. I mean, figuring out school was a bit of a challenge. And this was before there were any labor laws. I mean, we were just rock and roll. I mean, it was like crazy. I mean, nowadays the hours we did and the craziness of it all would never happen. I mean,
there would be five casts of kids. They would never let one cast do eight shows a week.
Right. Which is probably why it ended up being so special, because there wasn't those kinds of restrictions on it. There was a natural like impishness to it. But so it was, you know, going to Washington, D.C. was really fun because it was like, oh, we're doing this. We're going to Washington, D.C. And I was like, Amy Carter's in the White House. I don't have any friends in Washington, D.C. I'll write her a letter. Maybe we can hang out. So like I wrote her a letter saying, hey, Amy, my name is Danielle. I'm from Brooklyn. I'm in Annie. We're coming to play. We're going to be in Washington, D.C. for a while. I don't have any friends there except for the girls in the show, which sometimes mean to me. And I'd like to make a new friend. And maybe we can hang out. And I sent this letter. I never heard back. And we're at the Kennedy Center opening night in Washington, D.C. And Jimmy Carter and Rosalind Carter come in. And they're like meeting everybody. And I look at them like, I'm like, hi.
She's
like,
annoying.
They're like, what? I'm like, hi. And I'm thinking to myself, you raised a rude daughter. Like, she should have at least written back. Because it's not proper. Like, I'm Italian. You don't go to somebody's house without a cake.
Yeah, you can't walk in with your hands.
Polite. You say thank you, hello, and you're polite, right?
Yes.
So and she's like, I'm like, well, I wrote to your daughter and she just never wrote back. If she didn't want to play, that's fine, but she could have let me know. Oh. Well, that got us an invitation to the White House
today. Oh my God, is that? That's why you all were at the White House.
Oh, I mean, sure, there was other reasons.
I'm sure there are other reasons.
But that was part of like the, we went there originally to do the play. We did like a shortened version of the play. And then we did like a Christmas show as well, which was really fun. But we had a few play dates there. And I think that might have been one of the reasons why we got invited as a play date.
Oh my God, that's so funny. So when you met, you obviously met Amy Carter then.
Oh yeah. Oh, here's a funny White House story. So, you know, in the NYC, there's, you know, we're all like, everybody's plays different like New York people characters. Yeah. And so during NYC, I had the weird luck of being slung over the fireman's shoulder pretty much the whole time. Right.
Okay.
So, and next to the fireman is the character that plays the hooker. So every night I'm upside down and backwards, staring at the hooker, doing her like little hooker dance. Is that even can you say hooker anymore?
I think it's sex worker, but we can say hooker.
Back when we were doing Annie.
This is the 70s.
In the script, friends. It was called hooker. That was in the script. Okay. So, and I saw her do her little sexy dance, which I was obsessed with. I was like, this is the most beautiful thing. This is, it was so cool. And so when I of course learned this dance in my head. As actually I heard Andrea in her podcast with you say, we basically knew every single part in the show. And she was, we could have all done any role. We could have been Miss Hannigan. We could have been great. We could have done anything, put the right outfit on us and we could have been any role. But I memorized this dance, the sex worker dance.
Great.
And
the great sex worker dance.
And we're in the elevator with the president of the United States and his wife and some people. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to impress these people. I go, hey, Amy, you want to see a hooker's dance? Quote unquote. And proceed to do this dance in the others. I didn't know it was something that wasn't like normal. Like, you know, like I thought it was a beautiful woman.
Yeah, it was a beautiful woman dancing. How would you know? You're a kid.
Yeah, I didn't know. And everybody cracked up apparently. So that
my God. See, this is why you were such a successful kid, because you were so uniquely yourself in every situation. I want to talk about the Broadway run of, or your time in the Broadway run of Annie, because I don't think young people today can understand and I wasn't really around, but I don't think people could possibly understand the success of this show. I mean, it's like Hamilton times two, because there wasn't Broadway It wasn't what's happening now, this machine. And so, I mean, you guys were everywhere. I mean, you're performing everywhere. It was like the hottest ticket in New York. You're going to Studio 54. I mean, like the things are so wild. Try to explain it to the people listening of what the stardom must have felt like when Annie opened on Broadway.
Well, once again, I'm going to say I have to go back to the lens that I was seven.
Okay.
Right. So maybe turning eight at one point, but so as much as I got that, I was still more obsessed with, can I have a dollar to go to the arcade? Can I have, you know, but it did feel huge. Like all of, you know, it was definitely unique. I wasn't going to school, but I hadn't been doing that for a long time. Anyway, I had a tutor two doors down, like 3 days a week. And all the coolest part was all these famous people that would come to see the show were like, oh my God, mind blown. Like, Quinn Cummings, Christine McNichol. I remember Henry Winkler was in the audience, and like we would like, you know, always like, you know, scan the audience for famous people. And when Henry Winkler, aka the Fonz, was there, it was the like, Fonz. Oh my God. So what we did, we planned it during Hard Knock Life. We were doing the brushing, and we, it's the Hard Knock Life. When we put the things down, we all went, hey, with our thumbs up, like the Fonz, like the movie.
Oh,
did in the,
oh so my God, that. I love it.
And I mean, going to Studio 54. I mean, I knew it was special, but I don't have anything to compare it to. Like, I didn't know that it wasn't a possibility for other 7-year-olds.
But now as an adult, can you believe that was your childhood?
No, it's amazing. And, it was just to see all this crazy stuff going on. I mean, being in this place with this amazing music and this amazing, vibrant scene. I remember, Studio 54 had the staircase that went upstairs to go to the bathrooms. There was the boys' bathroom on the left and the ladies' bathroom on the right. And I remember the first time I went upstairs to go to the bathroom, because I would just go crazy all by myself. My mom would be somewhere, like, it was the 70s. Like, it was like, it wasn't, it was like different. It is now.
Yeah.
And I'd go, like, I'd never let my kid just run around a club.
In a nightclub.
But, yeah. But I mean, maybe I would a little bit, because it didn't hurt me. But I'd go to the girls' bathroom, and there'd be boys in there. I'd be like, oh, maybe it's backwards day. So I'd go to the boys' bathroom, and there'd be everything else in there too. And I'm like, okay, well, it's just everything bathrooms. And it was really, I'm really happy that I had such a great perspective on just seeing all this fluidity and this beauty going on at this time at such an impressionable age. You know, it was a real gift to be able to be around that. And I remember one night in Studio 54, there was this lady, I don't know what, how many drinks she'd had, but she had quite a few. And she had one of those wraparound dresses on with like stockings underneath. And while she's dancing, she's taking off her dress, and she's just like no top on in her stockings, just like having a good old time. And I'm like, I'm gonna hide her dress.
I'm gonna hide her dress.
Because I'm a kid. And I took her dress and I hid it. And then I watched her for an hour looking for her dress, cracking up. So I mean, like that's now as an adult, I'm like, that's terrible. But like when you're seven, it's like, this is great. This is a blast.
Oh my God, what a story. Tell me about performing at the Tony Awards. You guys did such an epic, like might as well have done the whole musical. It was a kind of time where I know you guys have like a 20-minute performance and you get to do your tap solo and Never Fully Dressed, and they do everything. Tell me what you remember about the Tonys. And if you don't remember it, what is it like to watch it now?
Well, this is the thing. I remember more the rehearsals for it, because anytime you're doing, at least for me, when you were doing that show, very specific way, night after night or night after night, and then you're rehearsing it with like on a different set, like a different thing. It's a bit of a, it takes a minute to get used to. So I remember like the rehearsal and thinking, okay, I remember this. This is weird. And then the actual performance, I don't really remember. But now looking back, I'm like, oh my God, I'm like staying there, I'm pulling up my sock, I'm like pulling my hair out of my face, I'm like squiggling around. Like I was certainly not nervous, because I was on stage like completely just goofy kid on stage, but I did a good job looking back.
And oh my God, it's really so good. You look like you're having the best time ever.
It was, that's the thing, because I think I was having fun. I never really got nervous doing
the
show.
You're like too young to have that feeling yet.
No, I mean, I would get nervous for other things, but I didn't, because I think we knew it so well and we was ready, like, we've been doing, just, you know, it's like the back of your hand. It's like, I could probably still get on stage right now and do the show. It's like, that's how ingrained in my, especially when you're at that age, when your brain is still forming and you learn something so deeply.
Yeah.
It's like,
and it's drilled, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I remember songs from the Goodspeed Run that aren't in that never made the play. Like Grace Kelly had a song like "He Doesn't Know I'm Alive." Deaf, dumb, and blind to the woman I am. He doesn't say what I think is missing.
I mean, you really know this song. That's so crazy.
Oh, I know. I mean, there was another song called Apples. Like Apples, all the hobos were selling apples. I mean, there was like I could literally probably do every version of the play I was in. That's before so treadmills and after treadmills. Before the moving stage and after the moving stage.
Oh my God, that's so wild.
That changed the show. Having the treadmills on the stage.
And automation,
But the only bad thing about those is one night, I think it was in Washington, D.C., Dorothy Loudon got trapped under she fell and her foot got stuck under the treadmill.
Oh, that was really scary. That's terrifying.
Really scary.
Especially when you're a little kid and this is like your family, you know, and you're like, oh my God, how were the adults with you specifically being the youngest?
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. I had them wrapped around my finger.
Of course.
We had a blast, especially Lori Beachman. Lori Beachman was my girl. She used to make me these fantastic, I still have them. She used to make these beautiful, intricate kind of these like drawing sketches of like these landscapes with my name in it and like pictures of me and like really fantastic. I still have them. I made it stationary for a while too.
Oh my God, love that.
She was just, as I said, when you're a kid, you can really spot special, you know, mm-hmm. and she really, I mean, she was incredible. She was an incredible person, incredible singer, and incredible, just a warm.
And so loved. This community still has so much love for her.
Yeah.
It just
and Jimmy Hosbein, I really totally like. He was Jimmy Hosbein and Goodspeed taught me how to do my eyebrows like one up and down. Like I used to be obsessed with like he used to do this like this thing. I used to be obsessed. Remember Steve Buchbard, or like all the adults were so much fun, and they all had their own fun thing. You know, it was great. I really got along great with them.
I was just looking at Martin's book and there's this beautiful photo of you recording the cast album.
Yeah.
And then next to it is all the kids, you guys all with your brushes and mops in your brushes and buckets in the recording studio. And I don't think most people know that you guys had to do all of that stuff while you recorded the album. What do you remember about recording the original cast album?
I remember, you know, that was a moment for me for a few reasons. One was one of the first times I was ever in a really big recording studio. And I remember, because I was short. I was like, even though I was like 8 years old or 7 years old, I looked like I was five. Like I was little. And so like, I was kind of eye level with the board in the studio, which was this giant board, rows and rows and rows and rows and rows of lights and buttons. And I was like, oh, this is insane. I was like, how does anybody, I didn't realize they're all rows of the same thing. I was just thought it was like a spaceship and all these
nobody buttons. Knows.
And then like being in that room with the headphones on and recording, it just felt so special. I mean, the whole cast was there that day. We just did it really fast. It was a really fun day. I loved when I got to be on the mic by myself. That was my favorite because it was just like, hear yourself with these beautiful microphones and the way they make your voice sound and headphones and just the energy in the room. And I mean, I certainly, I gotta say, I've been very lucky in my life to have been blessed with seeing greatness in person, like being around Martin, being around Charles, being around Tom. I mean, Dorothy Loudon, Reed Shelton, Andrea, like being around these, it's like, I just thought talent was normal.
Yeah.
You know, and not just talent, innovative, great talent was normal. And I feel so lucky to have been around that, you know?
Was there a moment where you were like, I got to go? Did you, had you booked on the family? Was it right back to back?
Well, basically I was getting too big for Molly.
Okay.
Even though I never wanted to leave that role ever. I was getting too big for Molly. And they were like, well, Danielle can wait 6 months or a year. So I wasn't quite big enough they wanted me to eventually step into Anne, but I was not big enough yet.
That was my next question. Yes, great.
So they were like, well, she can basically do a different role. Because I mean, really out of the orphans, Molly, it's kind of like Molly was the biggest role after Anne.
Yeah.
And it felt weird to like, for some reason, I just didn't want to do a different role.
Like move to Tessie. You're like, no, I'm not doing that.
Yeah. I mean, Tessie, they're all great roles. Yeah. I'm not putting any of the roles down, but it's when you're kind of like the littlest dwarf and you're getting all this like insane attention, then you go to a different role. I didn't want to do it. And at 9 years old, my mom. And at the same time, so my mom and my grandma and I were like, let's just go to California and see what happens. But I could have always gone back to Annie. And Charles Strauss introduced us to Norman Lear.
Oh, here we go.
He wrote the All in the Family song. And he was like, yeah. I can meet, give you a meeting with Norman Lear. So my mom and my grandma and I went out to California. We stayed at the Sheraton Universal Hotel. Side note, the only person like I really wanted to meet when I went to California was the Hardy Boys. Our first morning at the Sheraton Universal Hotel, I'm like, I'm going to go to the pool with them in California. And guess who's filming? The Hardy Boys. Hardy Boys. I got to meet Sean Cassidy and, oh my God, why am I blanking on his name? I had such a crush on him. The other guy. Remember. Yeah, I can't remember. You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And I got to meet them that day. But
it was a good sign because Hollywood turned out okay for you.
Well, you
pretty
know,
quickly.
What's really funny is that at Annie, and when you first walked in, one of the jokes was they have like the message board for like, there was the payphone there and there was a phone and there was a message board for messages that would come in for people. And they're like, oh, like, you know, Donna, you've got a message. Danielle, here's somebody's messages for you. People would leave messages back then. And the big joke was my mother would come and goes, has Hollywood called? Everybody would joke, Hollywood's calling all the time. It was the big joke. So when we first went to California, it was like, Hollywood's calling. I remember I would call backstage, be like, it's Hollywood calling. And Andrea was there the first week we came to California as well, because she was filming that Judy Garland movie.
Oh, Rainbow, my favorite.
Yeah, she was filming that. She came in like a few days after we were there. That was really fun to see her. And her and I were obsessed with buying Tiger's milk bars in the gift shop at the hotel.
Great. I love it.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
So was it very hard? I imagine, I want to jump to All in the Family, but I imagine leaving Annie behind was really hard, you know, to be like, this is going to be my last show. That had to have been a lot.
It was hard. To be quite honest, I don't remember that much about the last show. I just think it was kind of, I was probably more freaked out and jealous that somebody was going to be doing my part. Like, I think when I was doing Annie, they made me take a vacation for a week and it was the worst week of my life. I was like, I'm not letting somebody else, like somebody's doing my role. That's me. It's my role. And it was so hard for me to I could be bleeding and dying.
You're not alone in that. Every orphan I've ever talked to is like, I didn't want to go on vacation. I didn't want to leave. All right. So All in the Family, I mean, you joined that show and it's the biggest show on television, you know, as far as sitcoms are concerned. And when at some point, I guess someone's like, we're going to create this role for you. Is that how that sort of went down?
Yeah, basically. So we came to California. There was a few options I had on the table. There was a guy, I can't remember his name, at Paramount Studios that wanted to sign me to like a kind of a deal with like TV show and like a TV movie kind of a deal, but it was all new stuff, like stuff that hadn't really happened yet. Like one of the things that was being thrown around was like a Morgan, like with Robin Williams, like with some version of Mork and Mindy, but like nobody knew what any of that was.
Yeah.
And then I met with Norman Lear and I sang some songs for him and I had like this big briefcase full of like pictures that my mom had made, this like giant like portfolio thing. And as a matter of fact, I wasn't even going to sing for him. My mother goes, have you sung for him, Danielle? And I'm like, oh, okay. So I sang City Lights, the city lights, I love for those city lights. And I think I probably sang Soon It's Gonna Rain. the depressing child song.
It's your song.
That was me, my soul. And at the end of it, I guess Carol O'Connor was walking down the hallway and it was at the time when the characters of Mike and Gloria were not wanting to do the show anymore and they were trying to figure out what to do. And Norman Lear said to me, he goes, Danielle, you've just done so much for me. What can I do for you? And I literally said, I don't know. Give me a role. That was like, cast me in something. That's why I'm here. Hello. And yeah, so then within a few days later, they called me back and they were like, we want to write this character. Another naming thing. My character in All in the Family was going to be Connie at first.
Okay.
And I didn't feel that name. It's not a bad name. Just I wasn't feeling it. I'm like, I can't be Connie. It's not me. So then I picked Stephanie because I like Stephanie Mills from The Wiz.
I know. I was like, wait, her name was Stephanie Mills.
And then the funniest thing is my name is Stephanie Mills on the show because I loved Stephanie Mills and I loved The Wiz. So
have you had this conversation with Stephanie Mills?
We need to make that happen. I've never met her. I would love to.
My God, I've been trying to get her on this for a while just because The Wiz, I was so obsessed with that Wiz recording too.
Oh my God.
All right. So you play this role, Stephanie Mills, and I really remember seeing you in that show. And I do remember also my dad being like, that's the same girl who played Molly. Like, you know, like it was just, I was like, oh my God, what a star. Tell us about this learning curve of doing a half hour sitcom with huge stars on a big network after doing Broadway for, you know, a year or so.
Well, you know, it's all of a sudden everything's small and there's no music, right? There's no singing. And here I am like, you know, even today, like people are like, you're so loud. Like I could like be whispering and you'd hear me in the back of the next theater across the street. Like I just had, like, we didn't have mics when we did Annie. Like we had a project. Yeah. But still,
That's the last show.
We still had to sound that. They had these little mics at the end of the stage, and that was it. And so I was loud. I was like, even like my soft conversations were not soft conversations. And so I had to learn to reel that in. That was a learning curve for me. But outside of that, like I really missed the music part of it. Like, you know, just acting alone was not as fun as having songs and. Yeah. But you know, I got to be around incredible, you know, and I of course had watched the show for years before I was on it. And I also loved like Maude and I loved Good Times and the Jeffersons and all those great shows. And when we first, my first year filming on the show was in the KTLA building where they filmed Good Times and they filmed
Lucky We Got Them.
Jeffersons and all these shows and then, Different Strokes, like all these shows, we were all in this lot and it was like, super fun. It was super
all those
fun.
Kids like hang out with each other.
Oh yeah, we'd all like hang out and play like whatever, like actor basketball or actor outside games. We all sucked at all of them, but we're like,
obsessed we're cool with child stars of like the 70s, early 80s, just like hanging out in the back lot.
It was totally like, I mean, even like Lenny Kravitz when he was a kid would be there hanging out because his mom was on the Jefferson.
That's wild. How was Carol O'Connor and Gene Stapleton with you?
They were fantastic. I think you could sense that Jean was not as present in the room as everybody else. Like, you feel like she was trying to get out of the, you could sense that, but it wasn't really, none of it was my problem.
And so you joined that show in its last season. And I guess there would have been no way to know that there was going to be a spinoff, right?
I said the last 2 years of All in the Family, and then it turned into Archie Bunker's Place. I mean, after the first year, it was clear that Gene wasn't only going to come back for a certain amount of episodes. And that was also the same year that they did the episode where she dies at the end of the season.
I remember
it was really
that.
Funny because Gene sent a cake to the set on the last day of that filming that episode. And it was a picture of a gravestone and the cake, like a cake that looked like a gravestone, like a really elaborate cake. And it said, "A dingbat never dies." And it was really cute.
That's a wild story. And at what point did they come to you and they say, we're going to do a spinoff for you and Carol O'Connor?
Well, I guess it wasn't as much for me. I remember we were sitting in Carol's restaurant, the Ginger Man that he had in Beverly Hills. And he was telling me, you know, that we're going to be doing this. I feel like the network's not really treating us fair. We want it. I don't know all the details of what their business that was going on was, but I know that there was a bit of a rub. And I know he brought Martin Balsam in. So there was another adult co-star. They brought in Denise Miller. I mean, it definitely felt like a shift. And I know they were going to be focusing on the bar more, which made it hard for them to include
a kid in a bar.
They had to find ways and they did it, but they ended up adding like the restaurant section to the bar so the kid could be there. But yeah, I mean, it definitely was a shift. But it was still the same character. It was still, you know, the hardest thing for me was like starting to go through puberty on camera. That was
on television.
That was nightmare.
How old were you? Because you did 4 seasons of that show, right?
So I started when I was around like 9 with everything, and I finished, I think, around like almost 15.
Wow. Oh, so you really grew up on a soundstage.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And you got a Golden Globe nomination, which kids like never get.
I did.
What do you remember from that experience?
I remember looking back, I don't know why, the dress that I wore to go to that show was right around the time that there was the Princess Diana wedding. And you look back, my dress is almost like a replica of that dress. I'm like, who let me wear this? Who let me wear this like weird Princess Diana dress replica? But I remember loving that dress. I felt very, very proud to be in that dress there. And I just remember like the whole lead up to it. There's a lot you have to do to like for these award shows. And then I remember when I remember my mom taking the ad out like in Variety, or the big ad out in Variety, the 4-year consideration ad and all that kind of stuff. And it was basically for the episode where Edith dies, and because Carol O'Connor and I had a really beautiful scene at the end of it, which we almost improv'd, and I think that was the episode that it kind of cinched it for me. And I remember going to the Golden Globes. It was super fun. I remember being really disappointed when I lost to Valerie Bertinelli.
Rude.
I was like, rude. She's an adult. I could have won. But it was it was a great experience to have. And I'm very lucky I guess because I was a working actor. So just because I was a kid, I really didn't see the difference between me and somebody else.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like I'm a kid, I've got this nomination. It was just kind of like, I deserved it. I worked hard and I earned it. And I'm on a great show. And, you know, and we worked for this nomination. We did the right ads and we did the stuff and I got it. And so it wasn't like I'm a kid with this nomination. It's like I'm an actor with this nomination.
Yeah. And I love that.
Yeah. So, you know, that was the one thing about all the people I've gotten to work with over the years, like Martin Charnin, Carol Connor, and Norma Lear, and all these people, they always respected me and treated me with respect, even though I was a kid.
You didn't feel like you were an afterthought.
They treated me like an artist. I mean, I'm doing the same work as all of them, plus school.
It's right? Wild.
Plus like all the other, plus being a kid. And they always treated me with a lot of respect and a lot of never made me feel like, oh, you're just a kid. Like even on the reads for All in the Family, and Archie Bunker's Place, our first table reads, they let me put input and like, well, this could be a funny joke, or maybe like I had just as much say at the table as anybody else.
I love that.
Which was great.
And following that show, I mean, you had such a successful TV career doing Knott's Landing, which was my mother and we were obsessed with Knott's Landing. I was like a little kid and I loved it. Mr. Belvedere, Murder, She Wrote, Tales from the Dark Side. I mean, all these shows that are so iconic in my childhood. So tell me, we're going to do some quick fire. Oh my God, I loved that show.
The turkey. Oh my God.
There was an episode with John Lithgow that like haunts me. Wow. Okay. So I just kind of want to quick fire go through these shows and tell me what you played on them.
Hopefully I'll remember.
We'll I know. See. All right. So what did you do on Knott's Landing?
I played Mary Frances Sumner. I was Greg Sumner's daughter who for some reason had to live with, I can't remember the name of their characters, but the Michelle Lee house. I had to live in that house.
Yes.
With them. And I was kind of a naughty girl.
Okay. Mr. Belvedere, Streaks on the China, my favorite 80s sitcom. What did you do on that show?
I wore a brown jacket. I remember that. And I don't remember the best. I remember my outfit and my hair.
Okay. Murder, She Wrote. All right, Angela Lansbury, the greatest.
Well, let's just talk about my accent on that show. Okay. Oh my God. Wow. I had for some reason they cast me as a blonde French model, which is completely not me. I'm short, dark hair, and from Brooklyn.
You have a very French last name, as we've talked about.
I do. Well, it's French Canadian, but okay. Yeah. But yeah. So I remember that was fun to do. I got to, you know, I remember feeling a bit self-conscious doing that episode because I was supposed to be like a runway model, and like they have me on this place, like all these women are like 5'10" here. I'm like 5'5", like, but the girl is thinking with some horrible French accent, but it was fun and it was a great experience to be on Murder, She Wrote. And I'm really grateful for the chance that I have to say that I have worked with Angela Lansbury.
Oh my God, it's so cool.
And that makes me feel very proud.
Okay. What about Days of Our Lives? What were you on that show?
Oh, what was my name on that show? God, I can't even remember the name of my character, but I got nominated for like New Daytime Star Award or whatever, like People's Choice. But I remember that another show where I either got cast as orphans or like naughty people. That was kind of my thing. Like just an outcast always. And on that show, I was another like person that just caused trouble in the main character's relationships. It was a lot of lines to learn.
You're working a lot as a kid. What was this moment that you were like, I don't want to do this anymore, and I want to write music, and I want to shift my career? Tell me how that turn happened for you.
This is like, you know, before, like nowadays, if you're in a TV show and you want to do music, it's like, everybody's like, yes, it'll be even better.
How much money can we make out of you?
Back then it was like, oh, you can't do both. You're this or that. You're not, it was this big divide and this big, nobody wanted that. And I mean, this is back before artists at that point, I remember there was a controversy about like a Rolling Stones or some band like licensed a song for a commercial. Like, oh, how dare they? Like everything was so different, you know? Yeah. And I really wanted to do music and I loved writing songs. And I mean, my love of writing songs goes back to like Phil Black's dance studio, the Brill Building across the street. I knew that's where they wrote songs. Sometimes I would grab a piece of pizza and go sit in the hallway and try to listen to them write songs across the street. Like I love songs. I love songwriting. And I just decided I wasn't going to get anywhere if I keep acting, doing music. I wasn't going to have a chance in hell. So I was like, I have to stop acting and just start from the beginning again with trying to become a songwriter and a singer.
And you have released multiple albums that are very well reviewed and people love them.
Well, yeah. So my records, like I had one record that did really well in Europe, was like a top five single in the UK. And like most of my success as an artist was there. But then, you know, luckily that transferred to being able to create music in other ways too. So.
And then how did you start finding the right people to collaborate with, to write these sort of hit songs?
I think with most things in life, you just keep throwing things at the wall until it sticks. Like you don't stop. It's like, it's a numbers game, right? Everything, a lot of stuff is just a numbers game. You just do what you do. You work at this. Sometimes you're working with one person, you don't realize that's going to lead you to the next person you're going to work with. You just do things until you find where your feet stick. You know, I mean, I never had an attitude about, I would just go for it. Wherever the wind enabled me to go, I would go and work with, you know, work in those situations.
How do you like to write with a new artist that you meet? Like what kind of things do you ask them so you can figure out what kind of song you want to write for them?
That's a question I don't have a real answer to, because I could tell you, like with Natasha, when I first met her, there was just, I saw her and all of a sudden I just knew what to do. I don't know. There was something about her I fell in love with, and we were collaborative. It wasn't just me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, I don't know. I just knew this instinct in me that like put your energy into this. This is right. And you just kind of, I think we probably wrote about like four songs before we wrote Unwritten, you know, and then, or with Pocket Full of Sunshine, for instance, you know, like how do you write a follow-up to Unwritten? Like, good luck. Right. and you know, I was just trying to, what is it? What do I feel Natasha could communicate? Like, what is like, and I, she always reminded me of Sunshine and I don't know, it just kind of starts, things fall into place. It's hard to explain. Like, I don't really,
it feels
like,
so
people.
Like it's so organic.
I don't really drill people. I have to go more in instinct. I guess, you know, that goes back to being in such an extreme situation at such a young age, like Annie. Like, it was all instinct for me. Like, you asked about the opening night, I realized how big it was. It was like, it felt special, but I didn't have anything to compare it to. Right. So it was just about, I'm in it, I'm here. And I think having your brain experience things that way at such a young age has served me well as I've gotten older. It's also probably served me not so well sometimes, because sometimes I'm oblivious, but it's really taught me to go on instincts, because I didn't have education. I didn't have like honed skills. I didn't have any of that. I just had my natural instincts and energy that I could put into stuff. And that's kind of what I do still.
When Jay-Z re-released Hard Knock Life, It's You, was that a surprise to you? Did you know it was coming? And then
everyone in the
world was singing your song again?
I have a few issues with that whole thing.
All right. Tell us what you're legally allowed to say.
I don't have anything illegal to say because there's never been, but basically I remember, well, I'll tell you the funny part of the story. I was driving down Sunset Boulevard and I see a billboard. It says Hard Knock Life. I'm like, oh, what is this going on? And then on the radio comes, they're like, Hard Knock. I'm like, is this like a DJ thing? Like, what is this going? Like, who would sample like Hard Knock Life? Right. And it turns out, like, I've learned really quick, like, how what this amazing big piece of art that's being put out to the world was, that really, it was a fantastic piece of art. It's wonderful. And then I was like, well, shouldn't I be getting paid something to be on here? I mean, like, shouldn't we get something for this? And basically, it ended up none of us ever got a penny for that recording. Like, none of us did. And I do have a bit of, you know, bad feelings about that because, and I'm actually looking back now, I'm realizing it wasn't necessarily, I used to be upset with Jay-Z, but it's really not his fault because he legally licensed the song and sampled it. And then I just feel like the creators of Annie should have taken care of the kids more because they all got paid for it and we never got anything for it. But
that's,
you know, that was the contracts we signed in the 70s. You know, we didn't know at that point there was going to be sampling. Like, there was none of that in our contracts.
How would anyone know?
Yeah.
But also it's very cool that you're like, wait, that's me. Like it's that. It's-
but I gotta say it is a great like credibility story. It's certainly, oh yeah, it's me, you know, singing on Hard Knock Life.
People meet you now, or it comes up in a meeting, or if you're meeting with an artist and they're like, were you Molly in the original? Like, what do people think when you tell them that? I mean, that is like historic moment associated with you.
You know, it's interesting how Annie just transcends generation after generation after generation after generation. It's insane, like how all these kids just know about this player a lot, or how many have the Red album still, you know?
Yeah. I have one right there.
The other day I have 8-year-old twin daughters and I was in their classroom and I was just reading stories and stuff to them. And I guess my daughters had told some of their friends about like when I was a kid, and like one of the kids said, is it true that you were an Annie on Broadway? And I was like, yes. And which role did all the kids like were asking me these questions? And they were like, can you say the you'll stay up part? And so like, I did it for them. And they're like, that's you. And it's amazing how many kids, like even like 8-year-old kids who are like so far away from when I was doing the show, there's still an excitement and a connection for not all the kids, but some, you know,
yeah,
for Annie. And it's, you know, it's pretty incredible. I gotta say, you know, I mean, listen, all the credit really goes to Martin, Charles, Tom, and Andrea. I mean, that's the holy grail for this show. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, to this day, I still hear Andrea's voice in these songs. I mean, when to be like laying on Andrea's lap when she's singing Maybe every night.
So
I mean, I remember even being then, like I would start crying sometimes on stage because those freaking lyrics are like, they're delicious. And the way Andrea just had this way of singing that was like, so matter of fact, wasn't in her head. It wasn't,
it's like from her soul.
She's just like saying these words that are just so gut-wrenchingly beautiful and so well-written. And I mean, it's a masterpiece. And
I love it.
You know, yeah.
Tell me what you're working on now. What are you excited about? What can you share with us? What are we writing?
I'm always working on music with different artists, and we're working on some film scores and some things like that. And working on another little project that it's like a book project that's not about me, just something different. And, you know, but I'm always doing something, and I'm also, you know, a very involved mom. Kids.
Of course.
Daughter just did a movie. I actually sent you a link to it.
Oh my
not
god,
a
please.
Movie, but it's like she does modeling, one of my daughters, and she's on like Burberry ads and different stuff like that. And she just did this like amazing like film with the winner of this like big kind of contest for Elle and Lexus. So she did this like 4-minute beautiful Women in Hollywood short film for Elle and Lexus, she just did, which is great. And And I haven't really, she just kind of was just kind of falling into it. We've not really been pushing it for her, but since she's doing that, my other daughter, she's not interested in that. And she's interested in dance and gymnastics and art. So I spent a lot of time, you know, trying to be a great mom as well.
Well, I bet you're doing a killer job. We're going to do quick fire questions. Are you ready?
Always.
All right. Just go with your first thought. Don't overthink it. What was your first audition song? It's probably soon as it's going to rain, but you can just tell me.
I think it was Don't Rain in My Parade, probably. Okay, great. That was the one my mother loved.
You have to go see Leah in that show. It is extraordinary.
I hear she's ridiculous.
It's like I left out of my seat. Like I lifted out of my seat. It was unbelievable. Okay.
She's pretty extraordinary.
She's extraordinary. First Broadway show you saw.
Oh God. Well, it would have been on a Monday. And I think it was Dracula with Frank Langella.
That's cool. What was the last Broadway show you saw?
Frozen on Broadway with my daughters.
Oh my God. That's so sweet.
COVID. I haven't been since COVID.
It's fine. We're ready to have you back. Okay. All right. What is your go-to album for a car trip?
I love World Party, Goodbye Jumbo.
Okay. I want blank movie to be a musical.
Oh, wow. Wow. Jeez, you're stumping me here. That's a Hocus Pocus, but that is a musical, isn't
no,
it?
No, but it's not really. It's not a stage musical. We can make it.
Hocus Pocus.
Would you write a score to a musical? Have we done that?
Would absolutely die to do that.
All right. I'm sending it out in the universe. An artist you would like to write for or with?
I would love to write with Adele. Almost had the opportunity years ago. We were at an award show and she came out to me. She's like, I want to write with you. And we met and then it all just kind of didn't happen. And so that's something I regret. And I would love to have that happen.
Oh, well, it's going to happen. Can you name two Real Housewives?
Well, yes, Kyle Richards, because he was one of my best friends growing up. We were
oh my God, I'm obsessed.
And then who else? What's the one with the margaritas? <What's her
laughs> Bethany Frankel. It's fine.
That one.
All right, so you don't watch.
Used to watch, but I have 8-year-old kids right now.
What are you gonna do?
I'm lucky I can sneak in The Handmaid's Tale on my phone at night. So let's go there.
Okay, pancakes or waffles?
Waffles.
What is your favorite piece of Annie memorabilia you have?
The original Goodspeed Opera House script.
Yes. Did you do any of your high school musicals? You didn't go to high school.
I never went to high school. I graduated when I was 15. My high school graduation was at the Beverly Hills Hotel with kids of all different ages. Janet Jackson was one of them as well.
I mean, like you're a real Hollywood kid. Like,
yeah, I never went to high school.
It's
which is probably why I'm so obsessed with doing things with my daughters at their school. I'm always like in that building, like, oh God, she's here again. I'm like,
you're like, because I never went.
I literally try to get in that building all the time.
Oh my God, I love it. All right. If you can go back in time and see any Broadway show, any year, any performance, what would it be?
Mame with Angela Lansbury.
Oh, yes, I'm with that. Okay. The credit that your family is most impressed by?
Maybe the Oscar nomination. I don't know.
That's a very big deal.
Cool.
All right. Something you really wanted as a kid that you didn't get that you were like had a lot of stress about.
A turtle. You mean a role?
No, I meant a role, but let's go turtle. Don't even answer other question.
I really wanted the Annie movie.
Okay.
I auditioned for that. I really wanted that. I put a wig and green contacts in. I wanted that audition. I wanted that and I didn't get it.
Are you ready? You have to fill in the blank. The 1982 Annie movie is?
Here's the thing. I enjoy it. I actually, my daughters love it. I enjoy it. It's not the play. And I'd have to go, it's not that.
It's a different animal.
It's different. And you can't expect this movie to be that. And I think as soon as I learned that, and I was really able to enjoy the musical. I think there's some songs in there that
there's wild things in that movie, but I love it so much.
But it is what it is. It's a different animal. And just like the play is not the comic strip. I think the movie is actually more like the comic strip than the play.
Yeah. Last time you saw a production of Annie?
I saw the last live production I saw was in LA at the Pantages Theater. It was It was great. I thought it was really, really great. The cast was wonderful. It was really good. I enjoyed it.
I'm glad that you could still see it and see all of the joy and that you created. I mean,
yeah, I'm really excited to see the new version that's come out.
I know. I heard the tour is really beautiful.
Yeah, so everyone, I hear it's amazing. And
check it out. All right. So obviously, I think the answer is yes to this one. Would you let your kids do a Broadway show?
Sure. If that's what they want to do, they can do. My kids can do whatever they want or don't want to do.
Because Thanksgiving is next week. Tell me what your favorite Thanksgiving food is.
Well, I'm a vegetarian, so it ain't the turkey.
It ain't that. That's why you look so good. You look incredible. Like you're gorgeous.
Thank you. My favorite Thanksgiving food is, I know what it is. God, how am I even questioning this? It is candied yams. But I mean, like, not the canned kind. Like, they've got to be like, it's pie without the crust, basically. But it's just that for me. That and create like a cream corn, and then like cornbread, like all the
corn things.
Like don't bother with the green beans. Who cares? I don't care about any of that stuff. Just like, let's just call it what it is: junk food table.
Junk food and move on. At the table. All right. What movie can you watch over and over again?
Daddy Daycare. I love that movie.
All right, you have to pick one: Maybe or Tomorrow.
Maybe.
Yeah, well, it was to you. And what advice do you have for young performers who are kind of starting out in this business?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I look at what people have to do nowadays. You know, you not only have to be good at what you do, you have to be social media presence. You have to have so much other things happening. But I would say the most important thing is to still find the naivety in whatever you're doing. Find the innocence in what you're doing and not the slickness, because I mean, practice, like make your studies, make your training become second nature. So it's not something you think about, but your imperfections are sometimes what makes you perfect. And so I would say to really, you know, don't find what makes you special and work really hard to be good at what you do so you don't have to think about it.
Yes. And the rest is still unwritten.
That is correct.
Tell the people where they can follow you to see what's up with your life, if that's something that you like to share.
You know what? I can update you on that later. I'm kind of working on all that stuff right now. I'm more of a behind the scenes kind of gal at this point.
We love that. Would you ever perform again?
You know, I'm kind of itching towards that direction a little bit again.
Lately. All right, good.
You know, I think I would like to do something. I'd like to stop minimizing myself in terms of like, you know, and just actually open up a bit more and not be so closed off in life and do some more things, like experience some more things. So I would love to perform again.
You brought so much joy to so many young people, and a generation of people watched you grow up on television, and you're such a delight and so wonderful to get to spend some time with you. So thank you so much for joining me.
I'm a fan of your podcast. I love it.
Good. Tell your friends. And everyone at home, go to that Apple podcast and hit 5-star, write a beautiful review. Danielle, it was so great to share my Thanksgiving episode with you. So
yes, happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
And we'll be off next week.
Thanksgiving and 4th of July are the two best holidays because there's no presents involved.
I love both of those for those
and
reasons.
And there's no presents. It's just your presence is the present.
My presence is the presence. Yeah. It is. And your presence was my present today. Thank you, Danielle. You are the greatest. And I'm so glad to finally meet you.
You too. And I'll keep listening and oh my God, yes. It's awesome.
Bye, everybody. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Bye, Danielle.
Bye.
Thank you, listeners. This podcast is produced by Alan Seals, Dori Berenstein, and the Broadway Podcast Network, and edited by Derek Gunther. For more information on the Little Me podcast, go to bpn.fm/littleme. And follow me on Instagram at Mark Tuminelli or on Twitter at That Tuminelli. And for more information on workshops, classes, and everything Broadway Workshop, go to broadwayworkshop.com. Thank you for listening.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Suf's has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suf'smusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.